Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure. Jason, coming up, we'll talk about Caleb Williams' best game as a pro and the Bears' first laugher of a contest in a couple of years. That and more coming up on Hallis Intrigue. Jason, you and I are sitting here watching the sprinklers go off at Soldier Field. The Bears have defeated the lowly Panthers 36-10. It's their biggest margin of victory since the second-to-last game of the 2021 season, and it honestly felt not as close as the score indicated. Pretty good day, huh?
It was a great example, Patrick, of the Bears doing what a good team should do. I don't know that they're a good team yet, but you're looking for any traits, any signs of them being a good team. And they beat the Panthers last year, 16-7, didn't they? Mm-hmm. That's not what you should be doing.
On a Thursday night, right?
To a team that was on its way to the worst record in the league. This is a lot more like it. 36-10 is a lot more like it. And everything about it looked right. There were a couple lapses defensively. It's hard to play perfectly. But the defense really was smothering overall. The running game worked. Caleb Williams played his best game last week. Then he topped it this week. That's really, really good news for the Bears.
Caleb Williams, 20 for 29, 304 yards, 2 touchdowns, a sack, no picks, passer rating of 126.2 for the second straight week. He doesn't have a turnover.
And it took, by the way, it took Justin Fields till early last year, his third season in the league, to play a game at that level.
Yep.
Of what Caleb Williams did in Game 5. It took Mitch Trubisky till late in his rookie year against the Bengals to put together a game that looked kind of like what Caleb Williams did today as far as high completion percentage, high output, high production, really efficient passer rating, touchdown, no turnovers. It took these guys so much longer than it has taken him to do it. And it kind of, I want to throw to you on this because to get your thoughts on this, because I know you're writing this. It makes everything make a little more sense to me if this is where he is. Because this looks more like the talent that I thought he had. And now I can kind of piece together this as part of the context of the 5 games for me of that's a really choppy, difficult start. Then you see something. There is something in that Colts game. You can't just go out there and throw for 360 yards and have it be all smoke and mirrors. There's something there. And then you see the underneath game in Game 4, and now you see a very, very good game. A game that anyone, not just a rookie, anyone would be happy to have the game that he had that you just laid out.
To me, what was the most impressive part was that, you know, going into the Rams game, the Bears talked, their coaches talked, they said to everybody, including us, hey, we can't take negative plays. We got to move the ball. Caleb Williams goes out and goes, 15 for 15?
15 for 15, 8.4 yards per play on passes within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage against the Rams.
And then this week, you know, they come out and say, listen, you know, that's great, and that's a really important part of playing quarterback. But it can't just be that. We need to be able to take the top off the defense. Caleb has as many completions over 20 yards today, or with the ball in the air for 20 yards or more today, as he did all year combined. He throws touchdown passes of 34 and 30 and 30 yards to DJ Moore. And like you said, all of a sudden, the pieces of this offense that we've been seeing through the first couple of weeks kind of all came together at the same time. And, you know, Matt Eberflus went out of his way after the game to mention Shane Waldron by name and talk about the different things they were able to do. One of them was just no-huddle offense and being able to really stress out the linebackers on the Panthers who hadn't played a whole lot of football before. And the other thing was the use of personnel. And he said that, you know, Shane came up with plans for different guys. And you look at what's happened here. Caleb threw to DJ Moore 5 times for 105 yards. That's what you expect out of a number one receiver on a good day. But, you know, Roma Dunze, 5 catches for 40. Cole Kmet, 3 for 57. Keenan Allen, 3 for 33. DeAndre Swift, 2 for 47. Gerald Everett, 2 for 22, which is a lot better than his total coming into the game, which was 3 for 0. So all of a sudden, I mean, the list I just read you, these are the Bears' 6 best offensive players, and they're all involved.
If I had asked you before the season, you know, what do you think this offense aspires to be, I think it'd be really a lot of what you just said. It'd be high production in the passing game, efficiency in the passing game, a pretty good distribution of passes to different guys where you can't just zero in on one guy. That was part of the whole thought process of putting Moore and Odunze and Allen together and Kmet together is that, and Swift is a receiving threat too. And then steady run game, I mean, this is what you hoped they could be. And this is not an arrival to do this against the Rams and the Panthers, the 31st and 32nd best defenses in the NFL. But you have now put it out there for your guys to see this is what it could look like. It will be harder to do it against better teams, better defenses. The Jaguars are right there with those teams that I just mentioned is pretty bad. But it does start to get a little tougher at the end of the month and in November. Like, there will be good defenses ahead. They, in order to do this against teams that are not the Panthers, will have to get better offensive line play, which I don't know if they can get, and better Caleb Williams play, which I think they will get. I think they will continue to get better and better out of Caleb Williams.
And there's a run game that doesn't suck, too. And that's an important detail here. The Bears only averaged 3.3 yards per carry today, which is nothing to write home about. Still probably the second best game they've played. But, you know, if you look in the first half, before it was a laugher, they were averaging 4. DeAndre Swift had 15 for 67 in the first half, and then 6 carries for 8 yards in the second. So that was a whole lot of just trying to salt the game away. But, you know, you can win with that kind of run game and a quarterback who throws for 300 yards. And, you know, it's going to get harder because the opponents are going to get harder. It's going to get harder because it's going to be cold here. It's going to be rainy here. It's going to be windier than it was today here. But, boy, on a nice day in early October, Bears quarterback throws for 300 yards. That's about as good as it gets if you're a fan of the forward pass here.
I didn't know when we would get to the wind, but I guess it'll be now. I mean, Caleb Williams is taking Soldier Field 101 this semester.
Right.
And the syllabus says in this part of the year we're working on wind. Mm-hmm. And eventually we'll work on snow, possibly torrential downpours, who knows,
right,
and frigidity.
Yeah.
That will all be coming. Cairo Santos is like doing his, what do they call it? He's getting his master's
doctorate.
Soldier Field right now. It was really interesting to hear everybody talk about the wind today because it wasn't really that visible to us. And we're looking down on Soldier Field right now, about an hour after the game. It's beautifully sunny out, but they have the sprinklers on and the wind. You can see the wind pushing the droplets off the sprinklers. You can see the goalposts wavering here from time to time, but sometimes not at all. And Cairo Santos, this came up for me in the locker room with Cairo Santos. He missed an extra point. It's very unusual. Mm-hmm. We talked to Cairo Santos when he makes kicks too, by the way. But he said that the wind affected the snap, not the kick, that the snap came out sideways. And then that led to the hold being wrong with the laces being the wrong way. And then Cairo has to not only... He wasn't saying this to make an excuse. Please don't understand. Misunderstand. Cairo Santos will very accurately and objectively diagnose for you what went wrong on a kick, whether it was his fault or someone else's. He will tell you what happened. And so on top of all of that, Pat, weird snap leads to an imperfect hold, leads to Cairo has to navigate a bad hold and the wind, and so he misses the kick. And then you talk to other guys. You talk to Cole Kmet. You talk to Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams said today he was, during TV timeouts, spraying a water bottle into the air to just kind of see. The word he used was how aggressive the wind is. So it was really a factor. And I think one of the reasons why we didn't notice that is because he looked so sharp passing. He just looked very, very accurate to me. I'll be interested to watch the film to see if it backs up what I thought I saw in real time. Because if you think back to the opener, wildly inaccurate throwing. A lot of the offense actually worked the way it was designed to work in that opener, and he was very inaccurate actually throwing the ball. He looked really sharp today throwing, which was impressive when you find out how much of a concern the wind was.
Bears averaged 9.9 yards per pass attempt. Today, the Panthers averaged 4.4. So maybe Andy Dalton can use the wind.
They list the wind in the box score as 7 miles per hour.
Nope, absolutely not. By the way, my favorite back when I covered baseball was winds light and variable. That's when you don't know what the temperature is or what the speed is. You just say light and variable. Andy Dalton, 18 for 28 for 136 yards, was sacked 3 times, threw a pick, had a passer rating of 61. That is a really good performance by a defense. That, you know, we can sit here and say, well, they should do that to the Panthers. But, you know, the Panthers had scored, what, 60-some-odd points over their last 2 games? I mean, they didn't come in as a terribly inept offensive unit, at least under Andy Dalton. And today they were. They rattled off a long Chuba Hubbard run in the first quarter. 36 yards.
38.
Or 38 yards. And then they had 3 points the rest of the game. And the Bears defense really locked in. And, you know, when we talk about Caleb Williams, hey, he didn't turn the ball over. You know, he didn't make many mistakes. That's great. When you have this defense on the other side, that's a path to winning a lot of football games.
Yeah, all around really looked like they were supposed to look. And you will need to see some improvements to be able to maintain this level against better teams. But this is really the design. This is everything coming together for a day. Romo Odunze called it a glimpse of what they think they'll be this year, and that even this was not clicking on all cylinders, but clicking on a lot of cylinders.
2 weeks ago, after their Colts loss, I think you and I were pretty mortified by what we saw and how they were able to lose against the quarterback and Anthony Richardson, who had much of an idea of where his throws were going as I would. Like, he was terrible. And the Bears had a meeting with veterans. They went to Shane Waldron. They said a lot of things. You know, the things they put out for public consumption were, you know, we told them to coach us hard, and we told them to kind of, you know, when we're cooking, let us cook. Since then, things have been 180 degrees different. Do you put any stock in the dreaded player meeting, or is it just they played some bad teams, they've got a quarterback gaining more experience, they've got talented players who are showing to be talented?
I would definitely go more the second option right there. I think, though, there is some good in what happened coming out of that Colts game, because, A, I liked that it was player-driven. Mm-hmm. It was the players wanting to address this, not Shane Waldron going around taking suggestions. I think this was good that it came up from the locker room. And I also think it's good for the Bears to realize that 3 games into a season is late enough to take things seriously. That once 1-2 becomes 1-4, you're not coming back from that. So it's not an overreaction 3 games in to say, this isn't right, we got to take control of this.
The fact that Mercedes Lewis, who's 40 years old and who has, you know, seen more football than almost anybody to ever walk the planet, can be part of that, I think is really encouraging. And it's encouraging because I think he thinks he's on a good football team. And that it's important for him to be on a team that actually goes somewhere, as long as he's going to take this toll on his body. And it was compelling to me that he would be able to sit down. I believe he's older than Shane Waldron. Is that?
They're probably similar in age, yeah, if not. They're both around 40. Yeah, but, I think Shane Waldron might be a little older.
Some of it, too, is Keenan Allen being healthy again. And, you know, we still haven't seen even a B game from Keenan Allen. He's, you know, he seems to be just getting back into it. It's DeAndre Swift. Running like the player who they gave $24 million to in each of the last 2 games, and catching the ball like one of their best receivers. And even a screen game. I mean, Jason, we saw a screen today that Swift took for, what, 42 yards, something like that. It just really looks like the way you draw it up. And that's a really good sign, because I think they did seem lost 2 weeks ago.
The offense is doing all this, by the way, while there is so much churning on the offensive line. Nate Davis has been benched.
Hey, when two guys get hurt or ejected, Nate Davis plays football.
Did he end up playing at the end?
He came in when Pryor
got ejected?
When Pryor got tossed.
Only in the rarest of occasions. He's been benched. Tevin Jenkins got hurt again, didn't come back from the game. We don't know what.
It's an ankle.
I know, yeah. You didn't let me finish my sentence. We don't know what the timetable will be for him now. He's got ribs and ankle on his injury report. They're playing Bill Murray full-time at left guard in his place. It still is holding up, though. I mean, it held up against this defense, at least. Jadeveon Clowney, by the way, went out during the game with an injury, didn't come back. I think 1 sack on Caleb Williams today. Before he came out, both teams, this was so out of hand, very unlike any Bears game typically is, so out of hand that both teams pulled their starters for the last 5 or 6 minutes, I would say. one interesting thing from the game, Pat, is not one of the main storylines, but there was a little bit. What did Caleb run for today? 5 for 34?
Yep.
And he had an 11-yarder in there that I think is the one I want to talk about, down by the goal line. But he had at least one run other than that where I thought it was a little risky at the end. He was really kind of taking his chances trying to get that extra yard. And while you like that as a – you like the spirit of that. Mm-hmm. I don't want my quarterback doing that in the second quarter of a Week 5 game. I save that for when it's, you know, to win the game or in the playoffs or something like that. And he ended up fine on that. He didn't take any bad hits that way. He did take a bad hit going in toward the south end zone at one point, though. He scrambled. I think it might have been a third down, and he scrambled, got the first down, and he was up in the air, clearly out of bounds, and got popped by the Panthers safety, Nick Scott. And that led to kind of a mini altercation. Bill Murray got into it with, I forget if it was Scott himself or J.C. Horn after the play. Matt Pryor objected to that as well. And I talked to both those guys in the locker room, Murray and Pryor. Neither one of them thought that that connected to what happened at the end of the game where things got uglier. And both Pryor and who was it that got thrown out from the Panthers? Matt Pryor got ejected. I think two players on the Panthers got flags. One of them was thrown out.
Yeah, J.C. Horn got thrown out.
Okay, so J.C. Horn is the guy I'm thinking of here at the end of the game where Bill Murray kind of grabbed him and played through the whistle, and I don't see anything wrong when I'm watching the replay with that. And then Horn starts talking, and then Horn starts throwing punches.
It's like the one – football is such a violent game. The one thing you can't do is throw a punch to somebody's head, essentially.
Also, it's pretty dumb because everyone's wearing helmets. You're just going to mangle your fingers. Matt Pryor threw a punch, got thrown out. I'm looking at that and saying that's just kind of what happens at the end of a blowout sometimes where one team is tired of getting their head knocked in.
Yeah, especially when you're the Panthers. You've got a long season in front of you and one that's not going to be very good. Bryce Young, by the way, worth pointing out. Again, not a major storyline, but a storyline. Bryce Young played for the first time since he got benched. He was okay.
4 for 7, 58 yards.
But, you know, boy, you know, Bears fans who see him should cross themselves. I mean, what could have been here if the Bears had decided to draft him rather than trade for the haul that included Caleb Williams, DJ Moore, Darnell Wright, Torrey Taylor, Tyreek Stevenson, and a second-round pick next year. It's a cautionary tale, I think. And it's also proof that, you know, you need to go to the right situation. And nobody's sitting here and saying that Caleb is a minted superstar by any stretch. But he's done more in his 5 games than Bryce Young's done in a year and a half. And you know what, Jason? He's won more games in his 5 games than Bryce Young has won in a year and a half.
He walked into an organization that I think is being – the Bears are kind of being underrated as far as how well-run – they have been the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. With Kevin Warren here, Ryan Poles, you definitely can raise questions about Matt Eberflus. But in general, this is a pretty well-run organization compared to what they've been historically, and much, much more of a functional, sensible, cohesive organization than Carolina, where you have this impulsive, meddlesome owner who is kind of forcing things on people and firing people. And you look at the Bears right now, and the things that you feel good about with the Bears all could have belonged to the Panthers.
Sure.
The Panthers could have hired Ryan Poles in 2021. The Panthers could have Caleb Williams. The Panthers had DJ Moore in their building at a good price. He was on his second contract with them.
He just bought a house when they traded him. He was ready to stay in Carolina for the rest of his life.
There's a lot that they could have right, but they, because of really meddlesome ownership, have had a lot of problems. I think that's the main problem. And you can say whatever you want about the McCaskies, but that isn't happening here. They're not thundering in and demanding that you overpay for some free agent or that you draft this specific guy. They are giving Ryan Poles and Kevin Warren total autonomy. And even within that, Kevin Warren gives Ryan Poles totally an appropriate amount of freedom to make these calls. That's what you want, Pat. That's the way to own a team.
Sure.
You own a team by hiring people that know what they're doing and then let them do it.
And the McCaskies, you know, for better or worse, George McCaskey says every year, I don't make football decisions. And sometimes when you think you should fire his GM and his coach and he says, I don't make football decisions, makes you wonder. But there are other times, too, where that's good. Jason, this is off topic, but it's not. Do you know who Jordan Montgomery is?
And it sounds familiar. I can't picture it.
Left-handed pitcher. He pitched on the Rangers World Series team last year. He becomes a free agent. And he's one of those Scott Boras guys who took a long time to sign.
Gotcha.
Diamondbacks sign him, and he's horrible. And they sign him to a two-year deal worth $50 million or something. And he's so bad that by the end of the season, he's not even in their rotation anymore. He's just pitching out of the bullpen. And their owner came out on Monday and said, that's on me. Our GM didn't want to sign him. I did, so I overstepped my bounds and said, come get him. And then the owner says, it was obviously a disaster, which is great because now they have to trade this guy who they're also overpaying. But, you know, there are instances in sports, not just in the NFL, where the hubris, is that the right word? Of an owner can really torpedo some stuff. I don't think we've seen that with the McCaskies, and I guess that's a point in their favor.
Ryan Poles has been adamant that these are not the same old Bears, and it really it's true when you look at who's running the show. I mean, it is the same ownership, but Kevin Warren wasn't here during the Pace Nagy era. Right. Obviously, Ryan Poles wasn't here. Their player development, their cap management, their drafting has been good. We agree that their drafting has been good. I mean, the only real confirmed miss they've had in the top three rounds has been Velus Jones. It's been a pretty well-run team overall. We're still waiting for that to translate then into wins.
Right.
But this would be the time when that investment should mature, you would think, even with a rookie quarterback. You might be seeing the start of that right now. They're 3-2. This is the latest in a season they've been a winning team under Eberflus and Poles.
Yep.
And while their schedule will get much harder than the Rams and Panthers, you do think the Bears can play up to the level of some of those teams, especially as Caleb Williams gets better.
Pat. Yes, absolutely. The last time they were 3-2, it was Matt Nagy's last year. They were 3-2, and then they lost six in a row. So
it was falling apart. I think. I mean, they were 3-2 in. Let's not stay on this, but they were 3-2 because they beat the Raiders. I want to say.
Yeah, and in Vegas. And to your point earlier about kind of this might not be your father's Bears. Part of it is the draft and development, and that's going well. The other part is that the narrative that they're cheap when it comes to paying players, that died the day they traded for Khalil Mack. And, you know, you see them handing out, when they think it's appropriate, a lot of money for players, whether it's DJ Moore, Cole Kmet, trading for Keenan Allen and, you know, for the privilege of paying $24 million. Like, that's not something that a cheap franchise typically does. Now,
that move right there is something the Bears would not have done.
Now, we could talk about them previously. Having diet right in the media room. That's a different conversation. Jason, the Bears are getting ready to go to London. What's the schedule going to look like for them?
Matt Eberflus gave the players the day off Monday, Victory Monday. I think that's the first time this year that he's given them the day off. They will fly Monday night, land in London Tuesday morning, and I guess that's their day off. I don't know how much fun they're going to do. The Bears are practicing, by the way. We can't tell you exactly where, but like the Bears are staying and practicing an hour plus outside of London. So I don't think any of the players are going to spend their day off, you know, going to see Buckingham Palace or something like that, or ride the London Eye or whatever. But so they will get there and have kind of a low-key, chill-out acclimation day on Tuesday, and then a walk-through practice Wednesday, and then ideally for them, if everything's going well, normal practices Thursday, Friday, normal Saturday, normal game day.
How long do you think it would take them to get in the city on Mary Poppins' umbrella?
Oh, quick.
That would be the way to do it.
Yeah,
right?
If you have that, yeah.
Yeah, otherwise, I think even from our experience 5 years ago, Jason, just navigating London traffic at any time of day is a circus.
It seems like kind of a trivial point, and I'm not picking on Matt Nagy for this, but I didn't understand at all what they did last time. Mm-hmm. When you're going, if you're... I know that the Bears are pretty centrally located geographically in the NFL. If you're going to somewhere that's really far or really unusual, go early.
Right.
If you're going to London, go for the week. If you're going to Denver, go early. If you're going to play in Miami or something, or Tampa or Jacksonville during the months where it's still pretty hot there, go early. Have a practice in those conditions. Get acclimated, in this case, to the time change. Last year, if I recall correctly, they were in Lake Forest the Thursday before the game and flew that night.
Mm-hmm. In 2019, yep.
Got landed in London that Friday morning and kind of it was like, let's roll off the plane into a light practice. That was their week. That didn't make any sense to me, and I don't think that's why they lost. I mean, they lost for 1,000 reasons.
They lost because Kevin Pierre-Louis committed a penalty on a punt.
That's one of the 1,000 reasons I was thinking of. This is better. It gives them a better chance to acclimate. They do get the bye week afterward. That's another positive for them. And Pat, because of that, you can't overstate how important this Jacksonville game is for them, because if they were to get through that with any kind of win. And Jacksonville, I think, is 1-4. Going into your bye week, 4-2, starting again in the season here in late October with a huge game against the Commanders, it turns out, that would be a really good place to be for the Bears.
It would be. And there's a big difference between 3-3 and 4-2, just kind of in general. There's a huge difference between then having a week to think about it. I asked Matt Eberflus, hey, why did you decide to do it this way? And he said, in very Eberflus voice, he said, well, you know, the science showed that, you know, we need to catch up on get our body clocks right. He also said, you know, I went to Italy this summer and it took a lot out of me, you know, getting used
okay.
to it.
So all right.
That's just a humble brag that he went to Italy.
Yeah,
and all that
it, yeah, you know, Lake Como.
They should play a game in Italy, Jason. That'd be better. We will be there in London. We will be recording this podcast a couple of different times. And so please tune in for that as we get closer and closer to the Jaguars game. Until then, you can follow Mark Potash, Jason Leisure, and myself on social media. Check us out on the Sun-Times website, in print, on the app, anywhere you get your Bears news. He is Jason. I'm Pat. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.